This is CliffCentral.com.
You know, I looked through my list of things I really want to do over the weekend, and I've ticked off a few of them. Like, there are a lot of things on the list that I'm very pleased in the first 3 months of this year I've managed to tick off, but there are a lot that I still have to do. And one of them is to write a song, which I know is never going to happen because I don't have the talent.
You are really still set on this.
I'm so set on it. You have no idea. And it's going to be such a shit song when I eventually do write.
Do you know what your biggest challenge will be, or rather the bigger challenge?
Writing the song.
Showing us.
It will be the fact that you have this high standard when it comes to songwriting. Look at the popular songs. Nowadays, it's just a boop, boop, boop of a
if I had tons of money and I wanted to pursue this dream, I would just go to Max Martin and say to him, here's $1 million, just write me a song.
What's the first thought in your head right now? Give me a word.
Morning.
Oh.
Well,
sun is going up.
Are you going to write a song inspired by a life experience?
No. Let me tell you something. First of all, three things that will absolutely not happen if there ever is a song. Number one, it won't be me performing it. Number two, you'll never hear it. Ever. Oh. No matter how good or bad it is.
Really?
You'll never hear it. No. It'll be hidden away. It'll be my own personal achievement. And
so then how will you know if it's an achievement if no one ever hears it?
The point is for me to write the song. That's it. So I can't let Max Martin do it. I can't. It'll be me sitting in front of a keyboard and writing the song. That's it. And it'll never see the light of day. When I'm dead, maybe.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I don't want anyone else to hear it. What if it's terrible? I'll be judged on that for the rest of my life.
I don't know. You need a good life experience to base it off of as well.
Anyway. Look, it's not the end of the world. Okay, lots of things to get into this morning and lots of stuff to start talking about.
A look at some news.
Yeah, we can get into some news. I don't know if you know who this guy is. This guy called Don Imus in America. He's a broadcaster. And by the way, it's my 4-year anniversary that I left terrestrial radio. And Don Imus finished his last show on the same day, the 29th of March, which is precisely what we did. And then on the 1st of April, everybody thought it was an April Fool's joke.
Yeah,
you remember, Sia.
Yes.
And then I didn't go back to radio. And Don Imus, who's been in broadcasting for 50 years in America. I mean, you can hardly understand the man. He's so old now. He sounds like he hasn't got complete control of his faculties. But you've got to hear him to believe it. So Don Imus, who is one of those great broadcasters in America, 50 years behind the microphone, he's finally hung up his headphones. Take a listen to him saying farewell. This is probably going to mean nothing to anyone except me, but I thought it would be funny to listen to him, at least to hear the way that he sounds as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, Imus in the morning.
Sorry.
Imus.
Yeah.
Get out of my mind. All right, let's just get to where he starts talking.
68 in Palmdale, California.
Wow.
I actually talked over the intro. I was so nervous. But it's a cold open, you know. Before I get started here, I do need to mention Michael Lynn and Robert Andrews.
By the way, you can hear he's still on terrestrial radio. That in the background. Sure. I mean, that's something else, huh? But you can hardly understand this guy.
He's 77 years old.
That's right. Him and his wife, Deirdre.
Is the wife on the show?
She's involved in him. Everything that he does. He's got this little kid called Wyatt who's like a rodeo champion.
Oh.
It's the most bizarre. He's the most bizarre
human
being.
Which part of the states are they from? The Midwest.
He was born in Arizona, but he lives in Texas now, and he does his show in New York. So every weekend he would fly out to Texas.
See, that's why.
Don Imus.
That's why his son is a radio champion.
Let me just here the final minutes of the Don Imus.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my God! All right, we have to listen to this again. All right, here it is.
And dear Don Imus.
Deirdre Imus.
Particularly Deirdre. You know how when you love somebody, but then you get this feeling in your chest?
Yeah, it's called bronchitis. That's called emphysema. That is.
You know, you get that feeling in your chest.
Oh, same.
Don Imus. You want to hear more?
Sure.
I mean, this is most people in South Africa wouldn't know this guy. Probably wouldn't care about him. But I've been paying attention to what goes on in American broadcasting for years, and he really it was him. There was a woman called Dr. Laura Schlesinger. There was a guy called Rick Dees, Howard Stern. These are the big names in broadcasting. These people had, between them, 100 million listeners.
He's got an odd face.
He's a strange-looking man, right?
He looks like something has really startled him.
He looks like a villain.
That's his resting face.
He looks like a villain from a Wild West.
Thunderbirds. Like that Thunderbirds animation figurine people.
Exactly.
In your heart, that's the way I feel about her. And the role that she's played in my life is just, don't stop it.
Well, you got lots of time to spend with Deirdre now, because he's going to retire and go live on the ranch with Deirdre. The ranch with Deirdre.
Oh,
but he's wasting his audience's time talking about his love for Deirdre. Anyway, just take a listen.
So, and the same with Michael Lynn. And Robert Andrews, who I talk to almost every day. So I've talked about him through the years, and you know. I think you have a good idea what they mean to me, and I just wanted to mention. That might be remiss if I didn't mention Vinnie Andrews. He's the reason I don't ever have to work again, ever. So. And Esther Newberg was great, and she's a great agent, and she'll make one more deal. Come on, baby.
Ooh.
Should make one more deal.
God, all right. Anyway, I mean,
you can hear the dentures.
You can, right? I'm right. I mean, it's hard to understand the guy.
Oh gosh.
Jesus, what was that?
Is that out of greatness? Rolling by on the road to greatness.
What?
We did that.
Oh, is he crying?
He's crying.
Last years.
You did that.
Oh.
I did that. Okay. Oh. That's what we did. You goddamn right. That's what we did.
Like, okay, for someone so trying to end off on a legendary...
No, that was his farewell. No, he kind of broke the microphone.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I mean, like he drove out of that studio with like a gun salute or something.
Yeah, so I look. No one else cares, but I'm kind of going to say there's another chapter in radio's book that is finished, and I don't know how many chapters radio's got left. I don't think it's got a huge number of chapters left. I don't think anyone's going to give a shit if anyone else who's currently in radio leaves. I don't think anyone cares. Terrestrial FM radio is finished. It's just, there is nothing there for you. And it's amazing to me that it survived as long as it is. Over 100 years, huh? You know that? You know Marconi and was it Tesla? It was Marconi and Tesla who invented radio.
Yeah.
So this is a long history, and then you hear a guy like Don Imus, and you think,
Yeah.
All right. He's been there since the beginning.
Him and Deirdre.
Wait, if he's been doing it for 50 years 50 and radio
years.
Has been around for 100,
yes.
He really has been
half
doing it.
Half the time radio's been in existence, he's been on.
Oh.
It's amazing, huh? How's that?
But it's funny how radio would have a person like that. I mean, Google a picture of this guy.
Yeah.
He actually, you know, Team America World Police, the Matt Parker and Trey Stone movie.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like all the characters are based on this guy's face.
Yeah, pretty much.
Based on the guy's face.
Pretty much.
Face.
It's a very good. That's a good comparison. Do you know what I did yesterday, which was quite fun? I started watching Billions season 2 because season 3's just started in America.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I started watching the whole of season 2 of Billions. Such a well-produced show. I don't know if I'm the only one who got into it last season, but man, I've been waiting for season 3, and I'm very excited about it. So that starts, it started in America last Sunday, so they are on to episode 2 already this week. But I'm now going through the whole of season 2,
yeah,
so that I can be totally back, because it was, 2 years ago? a year and a half that Billions season 2 aired?
Yeah, it was a big deal. Did they ever take on the whole cryptocurrency thing into their storyline?
I don't know. But if they did, don't spoil it for me now.
Oh.
Feet, don't fail me now!
Am I the only one who slightly needs to get back in the game today? When you say, like, yesterday, I'm thinking it's Sunday.
Yeah,
did you not lose yourself in the weekend?
So yesterday...
No, I'm still don't know where I'm going. I'm so hungover and so, I don't know.
Really? Yesterday I phoned someone and said, what's the Sunday movie? And they're like, it's Monday, you idiot.
Yes.
So I felt the same way yesterday. But it's going to be a very short week, which for a lot of people is a big plus. Maybe you've planned to take this week off. A lot of people plan different sort of times for them to get a holiday. And there's an extra bonus here and there where you've got a public holiday because you take a four days this week and you end up with like eight. So it's terrific. But then we've got a little break where we all have to get back to work and put our noses to the grindstone. And then before you know it, 27th of April comes round, and that's a holiday.
That's a long weekend.
And then there's the 1st of May, which is Workers' Day, and then there's that big gap between then and September where you have to just work.
Just
get on with it.
Oh, this thing called working.
I know.
I don't know. This was the first year I actually didn't go anywhere for the Easter weekend.
I was wondering if you might have been in KZN.
Nope. It was so good to just stay at home and I had people coming over. But that's when you really have some rest.
By the way, someone says here on WhatsApp, I immediately went to Mark Fish's Twitter account yesterday when I heard of Mum Winnie's death. To see who she'd confuse her with.
looking for a picture of Brenda Fassie.
Yeah.
Oh, South Africa.
A couple of weeks ago, I met up with David Beckham. And we had a conversation for a couple of minutes, maybe 15 minutes. We talked about his life, his work, the things he's involved in now. He's managing and owns a new football club in Miami. He's brought out his own whiskey. It's called Haig Clubman. It is a new unconventional, stylish whiskey designed for unconventional people. And it's the brainchild of the revered and respected Haig family and David Beckham. It fuses the worlds of quality and credibility with a modern stylish flair, and it's for independent women, dynamic young men, and people who break the rules. David Beckham is good at breaking the rules. That's what he's done most of his life. Remember Sir Alex Ferguson threw shoes at him?
Yep, kicked a boot to his head.
Right.
Oh.
So I asked him why he decided to add this to his portfolio. If you want to know that and a whole lot more about him, download the podcast. It's on cliffcentral.com. Haig Clubman, not for sale to persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. Go and take a look at that. It's all on cliffcentral.com. All right. What's going on in the news?
Well, maybe not the news, but in crazy teen habits and trends.
Uh-oh. Tide Pods are gone and what's in?
Well, see, I mean, we all knew what a big deal Tide Pods were. They really were. But have you heard of snorting a condom?
No.
Why would you do that?
Guys, it's a legit trend. Now, the reason I bring this up is that just to understand what really dumb people are doing, so you don't have to do the same things. People are snorting condoms through their nose and they're pulling out their mouths. You know, there's like, obviously, there's a thoroughfare.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Are they doing? Are they filming it for YouTube? Yeah. Is there a reason for this?
That's just
Don't tell me this is some challenge for
it is. The condom challenge. This is what it is. You got to snort a condom through your nose, pull out your mouth.
I don't want to do it. Count me out of this one. Planking, maybe I would have done.
None of us are going to do it. I've just got to keep you informed about what is happening out there. So if someone says, "Oh my gosh, have you seen this thing?" Now you know.
Does
what
it have
is.
A name?
Well, just snorting a condom.
And where did this start? And why are we doing this?
Well.
And
must have been a Kardashian. That sounds like like the kind of thing a Kardashian would have done.
Okay, so if you go into YouTube and just type in condom challenge, this is exactly what will be taking place. People put. But you think about how dreadfully dangerous this is, because a condom is filled with things in order to have sex, essentially, expressed the
emotional kind. You mean it's got chemicals on it, and it's made of this particular kind of material.
Exactly. So to throw that through your nasal passage, one of the stupidest things you could possibly do, so even if it works and you don't choke to death, the chance of infection is horrendous with this one.
Right.
But is it like this video is over and over, people just snorting condoms?
Nope. I don't feel bad for any people who are victims of this.
Well, now you know what the condom challenge is. It isn't about not wearing a condom, that's the challenge. It's about snorting it through your nose.
Nature is always trying to find ways for us to control populations and for the dumbest people to go. It's called Darwinism, right?
Yep.
And this is no exception. So let's Let's be grateful that there are ways in the modern era, new ways for stupid people to kill themselves.
I feel bad if there were people to die from this. I feel bad for their families who now have to stand up at the funeral and go,
I don't, because they've clearly failed at some
point.
He was
a great kid, and unfortunately that condom just, like, that will be your legacy. You died because you snorted a condom.
Yeah, and if you watch some of these videos, I mean, these are not people who've got great lives. You know? These are not people who've done amazing things. Let me play a couple for you. You just listen to the sound here.
And today, I'm doing the condom challenge. I'm here with my assistant. That's booger, sugar, sugar, water, sugar. And, yeah, just drop it on count of three, all right?
Yeah.
Ooh, take the nuts. All right.
Oh!
One. One. I'm kidding.
I don't even want to see it. It's just so disgusting. All right, the condom challenge. Beautiful. That's terrific. So, I mean, what did you do this weekend, Neville? Oh, I did the condom challenge. I made it.
Will Neville be around to even tell you what he did? Because he'll die from that stupid act.
I don't know. All right, what else is going on?
Well, Gareth, a little earlier you spoke about the protests that happened on the N3.
Yeah, I actually got a picture of someone's dashboard that they took. They were on the road for 11 hours and 57 minutes.
11 hours?
Yeah. What usually is a five-hour drive?
Between Joburg and Durban.
Correct. Well, this time between Durban and Joburg, 11 hours, 57 minutes.
Yikes, that would annoy me.
Yep.
On top of all of the Easter weekend traffic.
276.7 kilometers.
Shucks.
11 hours, 57 minutes. That's the trip time that this guy's dashboard shows. I don't know who sent that to me, but there it is. No record, new record. N3 yesterday, North Coast KZN to Joburg, nightmare.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hey, what can I say? That must have been the most frustrating, horrible experience imaginable.
Well, from all of that chaos, 10 people were arrested for public violence yesterday following those violent protests on the N3 at Moy River. There were even 3 trucks that were set alight and scores more that were looted by protesters. Now, according to police spokesperson Colonel Thembe Gambele, she said those arrests would appear in court soon. According to a local councillor, Nhlai Nyezindlovu, the looters were mainly community members from the neighbouring Brunfell area, but they were not involved in the protests. Now, the protesters believed to have been over a truck driver's labor dispute. So, KZN Department of Transport...
So, they're not even linked. The people who looted the car, the trucks were not linked to the protest.
No.
God.
According to this local councillor's belief. KZN Department of Transport spokesperson Gwanele Ngalane commended law enforcement agencies for responding timelessly to the scene, dispersing protesters and cleaning up to minimize the impact on the busy end of Easter weekend traffic. But, you know, 11 hours later, as that picture shows, that, yeah, you couldn't exactly minimize it.
Jeez, I'd be furious.
Oh.
Again, you do not have the right to make other people's, your problem other people's, right?
Yeah.
You don't have that right. That's not wrong. I mean...
I'd just be frustrated. The area was also visited by National Police Minister General Bekile. Thousands of motorists travelling back to Johannesburg were left stranded on the highway for hours on end, and many had to find alternate routes while the authorities rushed to clear the area.
Yeah.
And sticking to some traffic news as well, we know how busy the Easter weekend can be on South African roads.
Right.
And now the road agency, well, the Road Traffic Management Corporation has come out with statistics of what they were able to curb over the weekend.
God, can you imagine how many people drove badly and fast? And there was one guy who was arrested at 208 kilometers an hour in the Free State.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Just on high speeding, I've
been fast, but I've never been 208.
Just in the Gauteng province alone, 22 motorists were arrested for speeding in the province, and those 22 and the average speed amongst them was 198 kilometers per hour. But the top 5 offences over the weekend from March the 29th to March the 31st, 4,153 people were arrested for driving at a high speed.
Wow!
1,946 for driving unlicensed vehicles, 1,909 for driving without their driver's license.
Oh, George said it's roadblock season on Thursday.
George Meany did warn us. 1,393 for drivers who were driving without seatbelts, and 926 drivers for driving vehicles with worn tires. So, yeah, the Road Traffic Management Corporation were on the mark this weekend.
That's incredible. We are really a lawless bunch, aren't we?
I don't know. I don't know who thinks they can get away with anything, particularly this weekend.
Gee, there were roadblocks everywhere. I didn't do much driving, but I could even see last week they were ramping up to it.
Mm.
Because on every off-ramp and every on-ramp to the highways in Johannesburg, there were roadblocks. Oh, yeah. There were police everywhere. So I'm very pleased I didn't drive anywhere this weekend, because it would have added, you know, huge anxiety to my weekend. All right, let's get into something else here. Steve Harvey's got a show.
Uh-huh.
And there's this woman who went up. You know that he sometimes lets the audience ask questions. And this woman asked a very peculiar question about her son. Take a listen to this. See how you would deal with it.
Uh-oh.
And how Steve deals with it, all right?
Hi, Steve. Okay. This is a good one. Recently, my son, my youngest son, he left for school and he forgot to make his bed. So I took it upon myself to make it for him.
Well, how old is he?
He is 12 years old.
Okay.
Now, while I was in his room, I found a nudie magazine under his pillow.
My man.
Now,
my man.
At first, I was furious, Steve. My first thought was to take my pictures of my face and stick them in that nudie magazine so when he opened it up. But I put it back. Steve, I need to know, was that the right thing to do, or should I have gone with my original
plan? Hell no! Wait a minute, you were gonna put your face on all the naked girls' bodies? Send your boy into therapy? Now, let me paint this scenario for you, just in case you ain't thought of this,
okay,
mama.
Okay.
One of his little friends is over. Hey, I got a magazine I want to show you. Oh, go get it. Open it up. Damn, dog, that's your mama? Now, they kids, right?
Oh, yeah.
Damn, man. Why your mama breast white?
Can you imagine?
You see the problem with that?
Yes.
Okay, so that is not a good idea.
Okay.
Does he have a computer?
Yeah.
No. I got news for you. That magazine is just for when the Wi-Fi go down.
Ah, spot on. Ah, Steve Harvey. Brilliant.
How that mother thinks that is
what a horrible
just
idea.
The way to go. Like,
what
yeah.
a horrible idea. Sticking her own face onto all the naked people in the magazine.
Guys, it's the age of overparenting.
Helicopter parenting.
No, you are screwing your kid up for the rest of their lives.
Hold on. Ben, this sounds like it's you going against your own position here. You always say the parents should be more involved, and the parents should also. Ben's big theory in the world is, and I love it, I think it would be a terrific thing to implement, that if the kid breaks the law, the parents should go to jail as well.
Yeah.
Right? So if you raise a shitty child, that you as a parent should be punished as well. Shouldn't just be the child who takes the brunt of that. So in other words, if your kid is a mugger or your kid hijacks cars, you and your husband or wife should go to jail as well.
Yeah.
Now, you're saying overparenting. And I
sense... Overparenting, bad parenting is the same thing, guys.
Oh, so you put them both in the same category.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's because of kids being left to their own devices. That often is a good thing. I'm saying it's just raising kids badly. Like, every kid's going to find pornography. That's just how it happens. This woman wants to put her face in the magazines. Mm. That's making a murder right there.
Do you think?
Making a murder. Or just going to...
Making a murder is a little bit... it's a bit extreme, like, I would say.
I reckon all those mothers who are overbearing with their children, I mean, there's a good chance they can get murdered by their kid.
Good Lord.
I don't have the stats in front of me.
No, I don't think that those stats would hold up.
And once again,
I think that's totally made up.
We are no doctors in this conversation, but I would also think this leads to incest. This is weird.
Or as someone calls it, wincest.
Wincest?
Some people say win.
Oh. Yo.
Check out in the world. It's a scary place.
Incest is not the best, you know? Is it uncomfortable for parents to have to deal with a situation like this for a child? Yes. Oh. But is it...
I had a dream last night.
Where's this going?
Listen to this.
Oh, okay.
I dreamt... This is the weirdest thing. I dreamt last night that someone arrived at my house with a baby. Like a baby. And I had to look after this baby. I had the worst...
Who would ever do that to you?
Nightmare. No. You have no idea. It's just I woke up in a cold sweat. I don't know what it means. You get these people who interpret dreams. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're probably going to tell me that there's something wrong with me. I don't know. I had this dream that someone arrived, like the DHL people or whatever, you know, to make a delivery, and had a baby like in a little box, and this thing, and I was like, oh shit, what do I do here?
It's an Easter disaster.
And I actually thought, well, now I'm going to have to change all my plans. Because you can't just give it back. I don't know where it came from. I wasn't sure. I wasn't even sure if it was mine, but it didn't matter. I had to look after this kid, and I had this nightmare of, like, now I'm going to have to change everything so that I can look after this child. But I took responsibility in my dream, which is the most bizarre.
Return to sender.
Right, you would think, huh?
You don't know.
You have to have a return address. I didn't even inspect the child to see if there was a return address stamped on it, but...
Oh.
Frightened the hell out of me. This happened just last night.
I don't mean to scare you here, and I don't mean to bring on a morbid
after that dream, you can't scare
topic.
Me.
But, you know, as the sibling with no kids, you and your sister and your one brother has kids. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had that conversation to find out if anything were to happen to your brother and his wife?
Yes.
Who the kids are going to?
My brother's opinion is that we should both, my sister and I, share some kind of custody situation. I've said to them, that's fine. Don't die before the kids are in their teens, because otherwise they're going to be ruined.
Because that's something they can control,
if
right?
Once they're like 13, 14, fine. Then I'm prepared to like, because then they can more or less amble around on their own. And, you know, you have to supply them with money and take an interest and that kind of, they have to communicate. But I don't know. I don't know that I would be any good at that stuff. So I'd probably have to find some kind of a nanny for them.
Take them to boarding school. Well, that's actually smart.
Boarding school's a good move.
That's smart, though. Like that takes them off your hands for situation.
It. Well, yeah. But my sister would be terrible and I'd be terrible. You know, I always wonder about this because actually someone said to me once that they were really upset that they weren't thought of. They were the sibling of somebody, and this couple didn't want the sibling to get, you know, to be the godparents in the event that something happened to them, and they were really hurt. I was like, I wouldn't be hurt. I'd be relieved. There's probably someone more qualified. Like, yeah, this could be a married couple. They've already got kids.
Yes.
Maybe they'd be good at raising the children. I'd check in every now and then because they're my relatives.
Yeah.
But sure, that responsibility. That's why I always take my hat off to parents. I'm always, you know, I'm blown away by the ability for someone to be as unselfish as so many parents I know are. And their ability to put themselves second, third, fourth in the line of... You just think of the sacrifices these people make to raise their kids and to give them the love and support and care that they need. And don't get me wrong, we often talk on this show about bad parents. You know, we talk about the ones that Ben referred to earlier, the ones who raise these monsters.
Mm-hmm. Incestuous, killing their parents.
I'm not even talking about this. Just these antisocial misfits that a lot of parents tend to raise. But I do want to give credit to the parents who get it right. A lot of the people who I admire, that I think of as exemplary human beings, people who I'd like to consider my friends, people who've done tremendous things for the world, they've been raised by good parents. And to me, I'd like to think they're more good than bad. I hope that's...
We'd all like to.
Again, I have no basis for this. It might be the other way around. But good parents, God, those are special people. Good parents are the most incredible creatures on earth. And bad parents are the worst. And there's no in between. You kind of, and you know what the worst part is for a parent, I reckon, is that there's no guidebook. There's no, you know, you can't just go and Google how to raise the right kid and just follow a couple of instructions and this kid will end up being a good human. As a parent, you have to feel your way around, and every kid is different. And, you know, I've spoken to parents who have three kids, and each of the three kids, they need to do totally different things. They need to treat them totally differently. They need to approach problems in a different way with each of the children. It's very complicated. It's like an ongoing science experiment, and you never really know what the result's going to be. And you just hope that you've done as much as you could for this little creature that turns into a human being with feelings and relationships and a career maybe and a life after that. It's unbelievable to me. It really is.
You are right when you say there is no blueprint, because it's actually interesting. A couple of months ago, I had this conversation with my mother, and at first I felt bad for her when she admitted this. I was like, what are you saying? But you're lovely. She actually admits that she is a better parent now to older kids than she is/was to us as little kids.
Really?
Like, my mother is not a doting sort of person, so she doesn't care. Like, oh,
is
my
that
gosh,
why you is that why you're always looking for love?
Well, actually, I haven't even mentioned it.
See, he's always searching for love. He's always got anxiety over not being loved enough.
But that's why she actually admitted that, like, she didn't find it cute when we threw up all over the place and had change diapers, or, you know, some people love that. But now that we actually get to reason and have conversations, and she gets to guide our goals and visions and
now she's interested
for our lives, she loves that more. And I found that refreshing. I was like, geez, like, woman,
well,
that's
surprising. We had a conversation last week with Melanie's son, Melanie Bala, and she was saying that, you know, she tweeted once that sometimes as a parent you hate your children, and she got a lot of flack from people because that's not a socially acceptable thing to say.
But, it's not a popular opinion,
but she was brave, and I mean, she loves her kids, don't get me wrong, and she admitted that she's head over heels with her kids. She just she sees the sun shining out of them every time she looks at them, but sometimes she hates them. Because they, in some ways, they have ruined her life.
They're horrible people.
It takes a lot of honesty to be able to say that kind of thing. And some parents, usually the ones who are probably not exemplary in any way, are the ones who get upset when someone else says something like that. Because I think Melanie's a great mother.
Mm.
And the people who would have been angry with her about that, I don't think that they are very good at introspection. Just throwing it out
and
there.
Just being honest with themselves.
But you know who I've always thought are the biggest heroes of all, because having a kid can be a little bit of an ego thing. The greatest heroes are the ones who adopt children.
Definitely.
Anybody who adopts a child, because there's thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of little children all over South Africa that would love to have parents who gave a damn about them, who don't. For various reasons, have parents, don't have any love, don't have any kind of future for themselves carved out and looked after and mapped out by parents. I mean, there's so many kids who could do with that. And if you adopt a child, that is truly selfless.
Mm.
Sometimes people have kids because they want to see what they could make, you know.
That's a big reason, yeah.
They want to push their own genetic code into the next generation. And I get that. That's what we're programmed to do. That's what our DNA wants from us. But if you actually adopt kids, that is spectacular. You deserve all those parkings that are for families at the shops. You deserve those.
You're so right. There should be a special
if you're parking. If you're a parent who adopts, you should get extra privileges. You should be able to drive the big people-carrying vehicles that I hate so much.
Imagine you're like special vitality points.
As a mother, you should get a bunch of flowers every week that should be paid from our taxes.
Mm.
You know, you're helping mop up society's problems by adopting kids and giving them love and giving them a future. You're a part of the solution. And if you are having more than four children as a natural parent, you should pay more tax. Full stop.
Sure.
Full stop. Because look what you're doing. You're loading the system up with your own progeny. No. That's not hard.
Hey, I have three siblings and all four of us are fantastic.
Quadruple the taxes on
your
parents.
So my parents actually added to society in a fabulous way.
You're the youngest.
Yes.
Yeah, well, okay. We couldn't have done without you.
I'm also the youngest of four.
Enough of you two. You, your parents, you two. I mean, let's say three. My parents as well. What the hell? More tax. You have one kid? Cool. Two kids because that replaces you and the partner.
Okay.
So that's sustainable.
Yeah.
You're not adding to the population burden. You're not narrowing it. You're just keeping it where it is. Anything more than two, tax.
Sure.
No, you're actually right. More than two to self-indulgent, really.
Tax.
Get more friends. Less
70% kids. Tax from there on.
Sure.
Yeah.
People are complaining about a VAT increase. Right. You're saying,
hey, by the way, that VAT increase, and this is something we can talk to Helena about in a moment or two, because we're dragging our heels here. We've got to get her in the studio. Talk to her about the VAT increase, because that's kicked in as of yesterday. And Helena Wasserman is the editor of Business Insider. A seasoned financial journalist, editor with more than 20 years of experience in some of the country's leading business titles, including FinWeek, Fin24, Saka24. She's even been the personal finance columnist for You magazine, Heysenwood magazine, from 2005 to 2007. And she is a master's degree journalist from the University of Stellenbosch. That was ages ago. I know you don't want to probably talk about ancient history, but it's nice to see you, Helena.
Thanks.
Nice to meet you this morning.
Thanks for the opportunity.
No, sure. I wanted to talk to you about Business Insider. I wanted to talk to you about business publications in general. And since this is the first week of the new VAT increase, there's probably stuff we can talk about there, because having written all these personal finance columns and having been the editor for so many financial publications for such a long time, you are probably more intimately involved in how South Africans spend their money, whether or not they save their money, what costs them the most, what they're most concerned by. And I thought this is probably the kind of thing that would be gold in terms of information for people. So how are you, first of all?
I'm happy. This is the coolest thing that's happened to me in a very long time. So wow. Thank you very much.
Well, I think Business Insider is a pretty cool thing to have happened as well. It's the world's... Business Insider is an international site. It's the world's largest financial news platform, and it's just been launched in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So tell me how you got involved here and what it means for you and who you're hoping to attract as the market here.
So we've been up and running for a month now. Mm-hmm. It's been massive. It's been really, it exceeded all our expectations. I think we're standing on about 3.5 million hits on our site.
That's incredible.
So it's been...
That's going to be like right up there with the biggest sites in South Africa, right?
Yeah, so we're really doing well. I think people have really responded to it.
So what are they going there mostly for? Business news? Are they going there mostly for personal finance stuff? Are they going for international news? What are they looking for?
So I think what they're looking for is... opportunity, right? So where growth is happening in South Africa, what the latest innovations are. We're seeing that it cut across all sort of age groups. So it's mm-hmm. a mindset. It's people curious about business, about how to get ahead, how to make money. So we focus more on making money, opportunities, innovation, mm-hmm. technology, and then how to be a better executive. So we're basically targeting the next generation of executives. So this is how to manage a company, which technology you can use, but then also the stuff that people are interested in. So it's we focus on business minus the boring bits. Mm-hmm. So we really look at the practical stuff. We look at stock tells, for example.
It's a big part of how South Africa's finances work.
Yes. I mean, we did a story. So if you look at the amount of money that people will save in stock tells this year, they could buy Pick and Pay in cash and have 10 billion rand left over. So there's a lot of potential in the economy that could be harnessed.
So Stokvel, just to let people know, these are kind of informal financial arrangements that people make in communities where, say, 12 people get together, they'll all pool their money, and once out of every 12 months, in 1 month, that one person will get all the money.
Mm-hmm.
And then they suddenly have a massive windfall and they can buy a fridge or they can buy a TV or they can... you know, that's their chance. And the rest of the months, they're actually contributing to the community.
Yes, and if you look at the default rate, it's 2%.
So it's really disciplined.
It's disciplined. I mean, if you look at some of the other larger micro lenders, for example.
Because a lot of people say that our informal economy is very laissez-faire and there isn't really a lot of direction and discipline, but there is.
There is a lot. People are working very hard and they're very disciplined about saving. So as I say, 2% default rate, if you look at some of the micro lenders, that's up to 6 to 10%. So it just shows you how important this is.
And
you know?
You'd rather be in a stock fell than be taken advantage of by one of these micro-lenders, because
exactly.
the interest rate there is just incredible.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you can't get out of the debt that you get into.
It just spirals away, yeah.
All right, so people go because they want to find out how to make money.
Yes.
To Business Insider, and they'll obviously go to get the news around money. But okay. Don't we have unrealistic expectations these days to a large degree, particularly a lot of young people? You know, they think they're going to become tech billionaires overnight. They think they're going to discover an idea that's going to make them extremely rich, and they won't have to work once they hit 30.
Well, that's news to me. I think many people are very clear on what it takes to be.
Really?
Yes.
That's encouraging.
Yes. I mean, there are obviously a couple of hipster techies who think their app will change the world. But the people we see are very clear about what it takes. They're all, I mean, I think South Africans are so exciting because they each have a side hustle. They have a normal job. They have two things going on the side. You know, it's a very vibrant, exciting economy to live in and to work in as a journalist, you know. So I think, there is, I mean, obviously you're right. I do think there are some unrealistic expectations, especially of new people entering the job market, for example, who think they'll earn the big bucks within 2 years. But, you know, I think South Africans are actually quite...
Do we have a good infrastructure? Do we have a good ecosystem? Do we have a good environment for business in South Africa? Could it be improved?
You know, I lived in the UK for a long time. I just came back from a stint in Germany, and I lived in the US, and I lived in the Netherlands as well. And if you look how structured those economies are in terms of rules and regulations,
yeah.
And I think we could be better. I think there is some sort of, we do have first world regulations trying to, you know, regulate a market that may not need all of the regulations that we have.
Sure.
But I do think people are, you know, hustling. And I do think that South African economy, to a large extent, you know, allows for that.
Well, the freer the economy, usually the better.
Yes.
I mean, places where people make money are the places where there are less rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. So maybe that works to our advantage. But some people would say certain parts of our economy are overregulated. You know, the labor market, certain kinds of the reliance on government. Government plays a huge role in our economy,
mm-hmm.
and maybe too much of a role.
Yes, but I mean, that cuts both ways in the sense that the more labor legislation you have, the more secure lending becomes, for example.
Yeah.
People get to get a house because they do, because we have labor legislation.
So in other words, because you're secure in your job, exactly. You can afford to pay your bond.
Exactly, and the banks know that. So
it reflect? Because so many people in South Africa are employed, particularly in the public sector. Do most of those people purchase houses?
Well, we have one of the highest homeowner rates in the world. I think we're up with Spain, which is also one of the highest.
That's very encouraging.
Well, to an extent.
Well, when you have something, you have something to lose. So you tend to be more responsible as a citizen.
You have collateral as well. So you can start a bit business against it and all of that. But it also cuts against you in the sense that you're not that mobile. So, I mean, there are studies that show the higher the rate of home ownership, the less, you know, it does impede economic growth because people can't move to where the jobs are that easily. You know, so it sort of cuts both ways. But I think net-net, it's a good thing.
Where do you see, and what do your readers think, the major areas of opportunity are in South Africa's economy for people to make money, to build businesses, to be able to change their lives for the better?
I think... for myself, it's definitely sustainable energy and the new projects that's coming online, which is really exciting. I think it will change the physical landscape and business landscape, for example. Agriculture, I think, is major. You know, I think there's a lot of opportunities in in value-added products in the agricultural sector and expanding into Africa and building things into Africa. So Africa itself, you know, offers...
Represents a massive opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What excites you? I mean, when you either commission or edit or receive articles from people, what are the things that you're most excited to see and read?
Anything practical, right? Anything that will actually change somebody's life and make them earn more money or get ahead or spend it more wisely. So we also have a very strict rule that you're only allowed to write a story if you feel excited about it.
Mm.
So, you know, it's excitement is a big part of our business.
How much of a role does the internet play in something like Business Insider? Because for so long, and this is something I wanted to talk to you about and threw forward to earlier, that we would discuss the idea that business publications have changed. You know, you used to have these big spreadsheets and people would, they'd open up a massive newspaper and it would be a man in a suit, and he would be the person who wanted the business info. Now it's everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's interested and everybody can get it by going online, right?
Yes. Also, speed is information is money. And so the internet online business news is absolutely ideal for business, because the more information you have and the faster you have it, the more money you can make, because that's how trading works, you know. So, yes, so the online environment is absolutely key.
And what are your feelings about jobs? I mean, in South Africa at the moment, we obviously have an unemployment problem, a massive problem. It's, what, 27% or something mm-hmm. that we're looking at, unemployment. How are we going to fix that?
Well, we also have, like, a massive skill shortage.
Mm.
And not only in the CA spectrum, but also in artisans, in, you know, fitters and turners and boilermakers and plumbers and electricians. And if you look at sustainable energy, all of these projects, these solar projects, wind projects, all of them need new expertise, technical expertise. People can work with their hands. So, you know, there's, like, 500,000 jobs waiting. The average age of a South African plumber is 56 or something. So there's a lot of opportunity.
Wow. No young people want to be plumbers.
I just think it's a legacy issue, yeah. You know, people went to university, they didn't actually go to study. So there's a lot of opportunity in jobs, I think. And, I mean, just looking at, we did a very popular story on online tech courses, where you can do an online tech course for as little as 150 rand, and you immediately upskill yourself, and you can get a new tech job in a different area, like, quickly.
Hmm.
You know, so this is, things move very fast.
How did you get into this? I mean, how did you get into journalism? What made you think that this is something you were interested in?
I always loved politics, so I wanted to be a political reporter, and then my dad forced me to do economics at university as well. So, and then...
Are you grateful or angry?
I'm so glad for that. And then I started working at Bilt, as a crime reporter, and then somebody got wind of the fact that I actually did economics as well, and so they forced me on the business desk, and so yeah, here I am.
And all that experience of being the editor of so many other financial publications, do you think South Africans have an entrepreneurial streak in us? Do you think that South Africans are exceptional in any way? Is there some area that we excel at that you're particularly impressed by?
Everything.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who's just spent, my husband's an academic, and we spent a couple of months there in Germany now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at one stage, it felt like I had to pay with beads. You know, that's so unsophisticated in the way they...
pay with beads.
In the way they do financial services. You know, it's really...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are always surprised when American banks are experienced by South Africans, because they're very rudimentary.
Exactly.
They still use things like faxes and... You still actually have to go to the branch to get things done some of the time.
And I mean, if you speak to any psychologist or anybody who's studied CEOs,
mm-hmm.
they'll tell you that the most important quality of a CEO is resilience, right? And that's the one thing we have, is resilience. You know, this weekend, the LA Times had a story about Cape Town, about the fact that Cape Town halved its water consumption within 3 years, something that nobody else on this planet has managed to do. You know, the Australians took 10 years to do the same thing. If you look at some of the high-income households in Cape Town, they reduce the household water consumption by 80% in a year, which is unheard of. The stuff that we've been through electricity blackouts. You know, we've been through every sort of crisis, currency crisis, interest rate crisis. Mm. It's made us incredibly resilient. And that, I think, is a very important quality. We see opportunity.
Well, Business Insider has launched in South Africa, as you said, been going for a month. Are you happy with what's going on there so far?
No, we're enjoying it. We're really having fun.
So you've got a couple of interesting contributors. You've got Philip De Wet as an associate editor. You've got Bruce Whitfield, who's going to be one of your contributors.
Yes.
So it sounds like you've got some very interesting people there.
Yes, we're doing interesting stuff.
Very good. Launched in 2007, Business Insider is the largest business news site in the U.S., and one of the fastest growing news brands in the world. Who are your competition?
We'd like to think we don't really have competition, but we obviously want to be the biggest financial site in South Africa.
Well, you're on your way to that. What, 3 million hits in your first month?
3.5.
Very, very nice. There we go. Businessinsider.co.za. And thank you so much for coming to speak to us, Helena Wasserman, who's the editor of Business Insider. I hope it's going to be one of those things that people want to read every single day and that people find something useful in. I like the emphasis on practicality, on pragmatism, and being able to actually go through a list of things to be able to figure out whether or not you're on the right track, because business can be just as confusing as what we were talking about earlier, parenting. Jeez. All right, very, very nice. Thank you, Helena.
Thanks so much.
Coming up in a minute or two, we're going to speak to Ndumi Solindi and Tumi Morake.
Yay.
Oh, I'm so happy she's here. Baby, you're back home. Oh, I'm so happy to see her. Love, love, love Tumi Morake. So she's going to join us just after 8 o'clock, along with Ndumi Solindi. And, of course, they've got a great show called Married But Not to Each Other, which is happening at the Lyric Theatre at Gold Reef City, 14 April, and I'll tell you all about the tickets and where you can get them. You do not want to miss that. So, all of that on the way. First, let's check in on the unnews for this morning, and then we'll get to Dumi and Dumiso. All right, you ready? That's the plan. That's the arrangement for the next hour. Don't go anywhere. Here's the important stuff. As you like it. All right. Cyril Ramaphosa and Jacob Zuma attended the same church this Easter. When asked if it was a coincidence, Ramaphosa said, sort of. Sometimes the GPS units inside the blue light brigades go faulty and the top-ranked ANC officials end up at the same place. It caused this unexpected rendezvous, and that's the reason why so many party meetings have taken place at the St. George's Hotel in Irene as well. At least that's explained. In other news, Meghan Markle's father has committed to learning more about British culture and the royal customs that his daughter is marrying into. He started off with some essential sightseeing, but then ultimately ended up passing out in a pub after losing a lot of money at the dog track. Though many have criticized this behavior, the local visa office says this makes him British enough to attend the wedding, which is a big relief. And finally, the Australian cricketers are so excited about today being the final day of their difficult tour in South Africa. They're staring at a defeat at the Wanderers, but that doesn't faze them. Right now, simply not crying in public is seen as some kind of success for Aussie cricketers, so they have to just get that right at the moment.
This is CliffCentral.com.